This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Oh, we have exciting things happening in the FBI. Yes, I said the FBI. We'll talk about that tonight. Sean Parnell joins us. He's got a new fancy office in the Pentagon. All that, so much more, including Mike Cernovich, coming up on I'm Right. There are so many wonderful things happening right now. I can hardly contain myself. And the wonderful things I'm most concerned about are things within the federal government. Oh yeah, I'm thrilled that the border is getting secured and all that stuff's necessary. We need that to save the country. But in the end, we have roughly 3 million employees in the federal government. Well over 90% of them vote Democrat every time. Let's be generous and assume half of those aren't communist activists. What does that mean? It means we have well over 1 million communist activists in our lives. They are in our lives, and in small ways, they rule over us. The bureaucracy of this country has been allowed to run free forever. So how this works, as we've talked about before, is Republican presidents, Democrat presidents, it doesn't matter. If nobody goes after the bureaucracy, they are the actual rulers who will make the policy. They'll make the policy because of the checks they hand out and don't hand out, you see. And so before we get to specifically the FBI, let's just do a little something here. You ever read the book Ordinary Men? I've told you about this book before. Don't worry, I'm not going to go into a big book review here, but there's a horrible part of the book. I mean, most of the book is horrible. It's about Nazis shooting Jews in the head. It's an awful, awful book. It's an awful book, but it's a very revealing book about human nature. I'll fast forward through most of the book and get to the end, what I've always hated so much. You get to the end, and there was this reserve battalion of Nazis. Actually, they were just German army guys, reserve German army guys. And they spend the whole book murdering everybody they can find. But in the end, they didn't go to trial. I know we all know about the Nuremberg trials, and we're picturing all these Nazis who are getting strung up, but most did not. In the end, the accountants took off the uniform and they went back to being accountants. In the end, the lawyers took off the uniform and went back to being lawyers. They didn't live the rest of their lives in shame. They didn't live it in prison. They weren't executed for their terrible crimes. They simply took the uniform off and went right back into German society. And that part has always bothered me so much. So let's talk about what we have here in our country. No, by the grace of God, we have not had a Holocaust here where the secret state police are shooting people in the back of the head and throwing them into ditches. But we have evil forces inside of our government here who have done evil with the power they've been given. Do I need to remind you what the FBI has been doing in recent years?
That attack, that siege, was criminal behavior, plain and simple, and it's behavior that we, the FBI, view as domestic terrorism.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
Domestic violent extremism is the most acute threat, terrorism-related threat that we are seeing to our homeland. And as President Biden so powerfully put it, words do matter. Leadership matters.
Why'd they say all that? Why'd they go that route? Well, it's very simple. I believe, and will always believe, not that I think we'll ever know, I believe that January 6th was their Reichstag fire. The Reichstag fire, speaking of Germany, it was the fire that, it burnt down the Germany's Congress, their building, their Congress building, it burnt down their building. And the Nazis used that fire as justification to turn government power against their domestic political enemies. And they went and arrested and murdered a bunch of people. I will always believe that the United States government did January 6th, organized it, planned it, instigated it, wanted it to happen. They wanted it to happen because, like all communists, They wanted to turn the guns of the government against their political opponents. And like all communists, they knew they had to find some sort of a justification for that. Because they know, even the Soviets knew this, the people were going to be watchful of that. Hey, wait a minute, are they just using this for more political power? And so just like the Soviets, just like Mao did, just like the East Germans did, just like all of them did, they had to come up with a reason, with an excuse. Hey, we got no choice. And so they did January 6th, and then they began to hunt down their political opponents to arrest, intimidate, and destroy the lives of people who oppose them. They even ran, you know, news programs talking about how, let's do sedition hunters.
Sandy, not her real name, joined a massive citizen effort to identify the individuals who broke into the Capitol. She's been directly responsible for helping to put people behind bars, and she now has to hide her identity for fear of retaliation. Sandy is today part of an informal community of dozens of ordinary Americans who came to be known as sedition hunters. Over time, they developed their own methodologies, guidelines, even a software application to keep track of every individual rioter, giving each one a pseudonym and compiling dossiers of evidence that they then turned over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, along with the rioter's real identity.
Evil. The government's secret police agency enlisting Americans, Americans choosing to participate on gathering intelligence, informing on their fellow Americans. Evil, holy evil. Stuff you would see in East Germany, in the Soviet Union. And it happened right here in the United States of America. And that brings us specifically to the FBI. You see, you don't get excuses. I was just following orders was never, ever, ever allowed as an excuse for the Nazis. It wasn't allowed by the Japanese during their war crimes trials post-World War II. It simply does not work. In fact, when I was in the Marines, we were told we had a duty not to follow unlawful orders. If we were given an unlawful order, we knew we were supposed to say no, no, sir. But the numbers we have are staggering. Thousands of FBI agents, thousands of them, were assigned to and worked willingly to destroy the lives of January 6 protesters. While the drug trafficking, the human trafficking, the kidnapping, the violence took place, tore this country apart for 4 years, the Federal Bureau of Investigation dedicated 30-40% of its field agents to hunting down peaceful people who sauntered into the Capitol. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is an evil secret police agency, and the agents who have committed these crimes should not in any way be allowed to take off the uniform and fade back into society. They should be arrested and prosecuted for crimes against their country. And the system understands full well how important the FBI is to ensuring communist rule in this country. That's why Rachel Maddow's on TV freaking out.
But beyond that, they appear to be targeting all the FBI agents who were involved in any of the cases brought against January 6th rioters. And to put this in perspective, the January 6th riot cases make up the largest single investigation ever in the history of the Bureau. The January 6th cases are the largest criminal caseload ever assembled by the Department of Justice. If they are going to try to purge every FBI agent who took any part in any one of these well over 1,000 cases, that's kind of the whole FBI. I mean, not every single member of the FBI, but certainly most of the FBI.
Most of the FBI. The guns of the United States government have slowly but surely been turned inward, and now they're all aimed at the political opponents of Democrats, and the men who held those guns must be punished. They must be punished not just for justice's sake, they must be punished for the future of this country. because the next FBI agent, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when he's thinking about doing something evil, just because some dirtbag communist leader told him to do so, he should be able to look back on what happens to these agents and say to himself, no, I'm not following that order. I don't want to end up in prison. And so I need everybody in the government, in the media, every member of the system to understand this about me. I'm thrilled that you're afraid. Andy McCabe goes on television and talks about how the FBI's in disarray, and this is supposed to be some sort of sob story about these agents and their pensions. I saw this segment, I stood up and cheered.
I've talked to more FBI people in the last 4 days than I did in the prior 4 years. As John has described it accurately, it is a place in utter disarray right now. People are worried about, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to support my family if I lose? You know, if you're anywhere in the middle of that career, not close to retirement, if you get fired, you're done. That's the end of your reputation, your ability to get a new job. You lose your pay. You lose your chance at a pension. You lose your health insurance. This is a moment of terror for these people. It is absolutely disgraceful that they are being put through this in the middle of some political gamesmanship or act of retribution. They don't deserve to be treated this way. It's unlawful and it's disgusting.
Oh, are they living in terror? What about their pensions? Oh, they'll have to find new jobs. My heart is just absolutely breaking for these members of the Stasi. Their tears nourish me. And maybe, just maybe, you feel this tug of sympathy for these people. Oh, they're losing their livelihoods. Allow me to reintroduce you to Elvis Chan, these FBI special agent who coordinated the Federal Bureau of Investigation leaning on Facebook to censor damaging information about Joe Biden so he could win an election. And after he got done using his FBI position so Democrats could win an election, he went on television and bragged about it.
I was very involved. Our field office, FBI San Francisco, was very involved in helping to protect the US elections in 2020. And I think we can all agree, or I think many of us can agree, that it was a very safe election. We talked with all of these entities I mentioned regularly, at least on a monthly basis, and right before the election, probably on a weekly basis, right? If they were seeing anything unusual, if we were seeing anything unusual, sharing intelligence with technology companies, with social media companies, so that they could protect their own platforms, right?
Don't feel an ounce of sympathy for the members of the secret police now that they're being forced to take their uniforms off. Being fired is not even the bare minimum of what should happen to these people. Being fired should be just the beginning. Every single one of them should be lawyering up, because if you use your position with the secret police to attack the political opponents of Democrats, you should spend the rest of your life in federal prison. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll talk to Mike Cernovich about the USAID stuff, FBI stuff, and more in just a moment. Before we talk to Mike, let me talk to you about waking up in the morning. You wake up and right away you know what kind of day it's going to be, don't you? Is that how you slept? How do you feel when you wake up in the morning? You want to feel good every morning. Isn't that the best feeling in the world? You wake up and you know you got 8-9 hours and you're like, oh, this day is going to be awesome. You can have that every night. Dream Powder from Beam will give that to you every single night. You see, it's natural. That's the difference. Dream Powder is the only thing I've ever had where I don't feel like garbage in the morning when I wake up. It's natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate. Mine is cinnamon chocolate. They have many flavors. They're all delicious. I just sip on a cup of hot chocolate before bed. Best thing in the world. Shopbeam.com/JesseKelly gets you up to 40% off. Go sleep like a little baby tonight. We'll be back.
Look at all the fraud that he's found in this U.S. AID. It's a disaster what the people, radical left lunatics, they have things that nobody would have even believed. The whole thing with 100 million spent on you know what, with money going to all sorts of groups that shouldn't deserve to get any money, with the money. I'd like to see what the kickbacks are. How much money has been kicked back? I would say this, the people that got all that money, are they kicking it back to the people that gave it from government? No, that's, to me, very, very corrupt. The real question is, how much of a kickback has there been?
I don't understand how one man can change that much in 4 years. Maybe it's getting shot in the head. Maybe it's getting arrested. I don't know. I'm so impressed. I'm so freaking impressed. Joining me now, Mike Cernovich, author, filmmaker. Go subscribe to Mike's Substack. It's freaking awesome. Mike, before we get to U.S. aid, this new Trump version, everyone knows who watches this show how frustrated I got with the old, softer, more a naive Donald Trump. That's probably fair. He would probably argue that's the exact same point. This new guy's outstanding.
Yeah, Butler, Pennsylvania changed it all. It's unrecognizable. Yeah. And in a way, it vindicates you and me who said, oh, he could have done this. You know, because I remember 2017, people called me a never-Trumper. And I go, well, that's interesting, considering I destroyed my whole life being one of the early Trump people and lost contracts, couldn't rent venues to hold events, like basically ruined my life. But yeah, I'm a never-Trumper, right? And now he's doing all these things, and nobody wants to go back and say, sorry, I'm sorry for insulting you and claiming you didn't understand things. What are you going to do, though? What do you do? I guess I just got to cry more into my pillow, have a warm milk and some cookies.
All right, Mike, let's get to USAID, because you have been all over this like white on rice, digging through this. I love that you're teaching people how to do actual real journalism, because we don't have any journalists who can do that. What have you found, Mike?
Right, the USAID scandal is wild, and it harkens back to something that Andrew Breitbart said. I can't get the exact quote, but it was something like, opinions have heat, but facts sizzle. There's something about putting the exact numbers in the face of a person that gives it a weight that's different from a hot take. So what way too many people on the right or conservatives do is they have a hot take. Foreign aid is a scam. And everybody's like, I mean, yeah, kind of, sure. But then you go through the forms, which thank you to Data Republican for doing it. I don't want to be Tim Walz and Stolen Valor, right? Data Republican, Elon Doge, all these people really got this rolling. And when you go in, you're like, wait a minute. Because you can search at Data Republican by term, and you'll see, okay, $13 million to create diversity goes to a nonprofit. And then you can go to ProPublica, which is a far left-wing site, but they have all the tax returns, and it's called a Form 990. So you go to USAID, you type in diversity. Okay, $13 million from USAID to whatever, the Academic Scholar Institute of Scholars and Academics. And then you go Academic Scholar Institute of Scholars for Academics, Form 990, and you look and there's all these people making $300,000-$500,000 a year. In the case of the Kennedy Center in New York, once you factor in retirement contributions, $1.5 million. So you'll give, there was one, and some people go, oh, well, that's not USAID, that's National Endowment of the Arts. So for all the little nitpickers out there, I'm using USAID as kind of a catch-all. What you do is you trace the money from you, the taxpayers, to these nonprofits, and you find out that people have been living high in the hog while your currency has been inflated. And it's actually, my eyes were glazing over, because I felt like an accountant staring at a great financial fraud, a great financial crime. And even though people would say that it's legal, right, because the fact checkers are nitpicking, you find out this is scandalous. If it is legal under the law, technically, it's still an outrage and a scandal. And once you get into the weeds on the numbers, it's completely indefensible.
Mike, I've talked about this before, that what we have in this country because of citizen neglect, years and years and years of citizen neglect, is we have a gangster government now. And really, it's just about robbing the treasury. It's all about sucking up all of your money and handing it out to their friends while punishing their enemies wherever they can get a chance. And what I'm seeing with this USAID revelation is just more of that we fund left-wing activism, we fund these scumbags, all the dirtball protesters in the street, we pay for all of it.
Right. What the sea change, I think, that'll happen, or hope will happen, is we would say, well, this is Soros funded, this is a billionaire funded, this is Reid Hoffman funded. No, no, no. This was like we paid for this. With our inflated currency and all of us having to watch our paychecks, we paid to make all these people live like kings, which is again not to be one of those dorks who are you know, Democrats are the real racists, right? Those talking points don't really move much. But it occurred to me yesterday how the left always wants to talk about the working class and class solidarity and why can't we have a left-wing working class coalition? Well, because all of your people are the looters and the freeloaders, right? What if you're some snob in D.C., you're making 500K, your wife's making 400 or 500K, you probably have a midwit college graduate daughter making 150K. You guys, every year, you're becoming multimillionaires. Oh, but why can't, but they're like, oh, why can't we reach the Latinos, right? Because you don't know any of these people. So it does reveal the complete hoax of their so-called working class coalition. But for me, it just is honestly, man, because I've had some pretty good years in the private sector and made my own money and everything. And even I, when I see this money, I get angry. But I also get angry for the people who are plowing snow, doing roofing in the summer. I've done jobs like that, right? Roofing in the summer, carrying up the tiles under the roof, climbing up a ladder, hoping you don't fall down a ladder. Then you're on the top of the roof and the sun's reflecting off the tar and getting into your face, so it feels like it's 120 up there, and it probably is. And you're making 50, 60 grand a year doing that, right? You one false move and your life is irreparably changed. And it's not like, you know, being media, I'm not claiming it's like an easy job, but, you know, I do face legitimate prosecution or have from framed crimes in the previous administration. I don't worry about that now. I don't lose any sleep now. But the people who are in D.C. are just looting the country, and they look down on people. So it truly is, like, to use the word of left, I was really triggered yesterday. I was 100% triggered the entire day.
Gosh. I wish you hadn't brought up roofing, Mike. That was the worst freaking job ever. If I had to choose between roofing or doing asphalt work, I don't know which one I would pick. I don't know if you ever did any asphalt, but the bottoms of your work boots would melt. Yeah, at the end of the day, your bottom of your work boots would be freaking melted. Just like on the roof, you'd have that tar all over your jeans and stuff like that. Gosh, that sucked so bad. All right, stop. I'm going to get sidetracked. Speaking of, you made a great point yesterday about the media being subsidized. Caroline Levitt said this about Politico.
And I can confirm that the more than 8 million taxpayer dollars that have gone to essentially subsidizing subscriptions to Politico on the American taxpayer's dime will no longer be happening. The Doge team is working on canceling those payments now.
You made a great point when you said all these right-wingers have to try to find a way to make their own living, and people wonder how companies like Politico do it. Of course, they do it with our money.
Right. And then, of course, the fact checkers go, well, they were selling a pro subscription, as if we're that stupid, right? Yeah, yesterday was a very good example of why fact checking doesn't work and isn't credible. So they would say, well, Cernovich, you claimed USAID funded this nonprofit. And then they go, USAID doesn't fund it. And they end up, oh, sorry, it's the National Endowment of the Arts that gave the Kennedy Center $50 million for bullcrap. And then the Kennedy Center paid its CEO $1.5 million. And a bunch of other people, $500, $600, $700. Oh, okay, whatever, you know. But that's how that scam works. So they go, well, the government was not giving them money. USAID didn't give them money. No, no. Okay, so sorry. Government agencies subscribe to their overpriced garbage subscription service as a... it's like the book contract, right? Why in the world is a book from Hillary Clinton, when she was relevant, why was that a $10, $20 million book deal? You can look at book sales. You've sold books. You know what you can make on a book. You know if a book sells 100,000 copies, you can back of the envelope know what that makes. So how is it that these Democrat, like Tim Walz, is going to get a massive book deal, and we know that book is not going to sell over 100,000 copies, right? We just know these things, so you can do the math. Okay, $6 a book, 100,000 books, 600,000. Why is he getting 5 to 10 million, right? Or how many books do you have to sell to justify these book deals? Oh, 50 million to Michelle Obama or whatever, or to who you know, whatever the exact numbers are. But you would just say, okay, 25 million to Michelle Obama, let's divide that by $6. How many books does she have to sell? And then you can check on BookScan and other places how they sell them. Well, this is the same thing here. This is the political influence thing, which is thank you, Politico, for helping us win with the Russian laptop disinformation hoax. Here, we'll subscribe to a bunch of your stuff and give us the ultra tier premium package, the $30,000 a year package, and we'll do that. The fact checkers, again, I mean, it only helps us that they do these things because everybody is kind of caught onto the scam now. Okay, we get it. We know what most of these book deals are.
Yeah, we certainly do. I always laugh when I see that people want to know, well, why is Senator Jerkwater putting out a book? No one wants to read it. Well, he's doing it. It's just a way to, it's money laundering scheme. It's just a way, he's got a slush fund somewhere. It's what it all is. All right, Mike, I can't let you go. You're a California guy. What's it like? Everyone, of course, we live in this nuclear news cycle, which is what I call it. You pay attention to everything for about an hour, and then you move on to the next thing. Well, California is still wiped out from those fires. What's it like out there? What's happening?
Yeah, a lot of people, there hasn't been any waste removal so far last I heard because of all these government agencies and what if there's asbestos and what if there's lithium in the water and you name it. So even beyond getting the approval process, there's going to be a problem. What's more or less happened is that, and this is why California is like a weird state. So I lived in Malibu. Now people would go, ooh, you lived in Malibu, must be nice, Nepo baby trust funder. No, I lived in a woman's garage in Malibu and she wasn't rich. She had just moved there in 1970 and her house was $75,000 and now it's worth, millions of dollars. So people like that are more or less wiped out because the insurance isn't going to be enough to rebuild, right? So you have that class of people who are, they just happened to luck into California in the 70s and people say, oh, they're so rich. No, there's a lot of people living in multi-million dollar houses in California making $80,000 a year just by virtue of you bought it when it was $75,000 or $200,000 and now it's worth millions, but that's not really your fault. So those people are kind of wiped out. The Richies all went to the fancy hotels in Laguna Beach and these areas. So a bunch of them are resettling in Manhattan Beach because that's still close enough to LA. And we're hoping that not too many of them end up in Orange County because maybe they'll wake up and vote Republican or maybe they won't, but I'd rather not really risk it. Orange County had our congressional seat stolen from us in the last election. Hopefully we can get that fixed in California if Trump can. So you have the Richies who they can afford to live anywhere and resettle anywhere. But by the time they're in Manhattan Beach and by the time they can rebuild, there's no schools, there's no, people don't think about it. Like what makes a town, to get philosophical, what makes a town? It's the focal points. It's the football games, especially if you're in Texas. It's the schools, it's these nodes that draw people. And if your school burns down, you move your kids in a new school for 2 years, do you rebuild or do you start over somewhere else? So there's a lot of that going on. And then, of course, there are people who are just like wiped out financially and they'll most likely have to leave the state. And those are the cases that are tragic. That was what upset me about the California discussion, is that definitely politicize it with the Richies who voted for Karen Bass and them. Definitely politicize that. But the kind of person who, I slept in someone's garage that had been converted into a studio apartment, some bootleg apartment. The people like that were good people. And they're wiped out totally. And most of them voted Republican. They were these old school Californians. So there, and then of course there's, I've a couple companies I invested in, they were living in Palisades, good Republicans. The whole thing is kind of a mess. And what it's gonna look like to rebuild is hard to say, but the state's changed. And I definitely think it has nudged people to the right. So I think what we're going to see in California is a dino, a Democrat in name only, which is basically what Rick Caruso was, because in California, you're not going to be hardcore pro-life and win. You're just not going to. You're not going to be shooting AR-15s and win. Yeah, I wish. But you can have something other than Zimbabwe, right? You can have something that's run like a real country and not an African third world dictatorship.
Oh, gosh. Well, I hope you do, Mike, because I love California, and I want it to come back. Mike, you're the best, brother. I appreciate you. John Parnell, my friend, he's got an office in the Pentagon now. What's that like? Am I allowed to go visit? I don't know. I'm going to ask him. I promise I'm going to ask him, and if I can go visit, I'll probably video it, put it up on our YouTube channel, something cool like that. So I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted. I've been keeping you posted about Pure Talk, have I not? Tell you all the time. Save a bunch of money, switch your cell phone. But it's not just about the money savings. That's nice right now. I mean, when you're talking about saving $1,000 a year, what could your family do with $1,000 a year? It's a lot of money. So that's nice, but it's about putting our money where our morals are as well. It's nice when you can do both. Save money and stop giving money to Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Pure Talk's on the same network. Pure Talk's run by a veteran. Pure Talk hires Americans who speak English, which is wonderful. Switch. They're giving out free phones right now with qualifying plans. Free phones. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, you know, I don't like to brag, right? It's to be the last thing in the world I would ever consider doing is bragging, but I happen to have some friends in some pretty high places now. Sean Parnell, he doesn't need any introduction on this show. Sean and I have been friends for years, and I first knew Sean back when he was just a stupid army officer. No, he fought in Afghanistan. He wrote a great book. But now, let me see. Hold on, Sean, hold on. I got to make sure I read this off the paper. Never introduced you this way before. Now he is the chief Pentagon spokesman and assistant to SecDef for public affairs. Sean, the only thing I want to know is, can I come visit you? Do you have an office in the Pentagon? Am I allowed? Like, I've never been there. I want to come.
You know what's funny? I've never been to the Pentagon either. Guys like me and you spent all of our time in the trenches, front towards enemy. Ugh. I have never been in an air-conditioned military office in my entire career, but somehow, you know, because of President Trump, like, I get to walk back into the Pentagon and not just, I mean, I take this very, very seriously. We're laughing about it here, but yeah. Jesse, one of the things, and I know you and I have talked about this many times, but I know if, at least for me after 9/11, when I joined, one of the things that I didn't realize going in, and I understood the history of the American military on an academic level. I knew how amazing, you know, the men and women who served this country were before me and generations prior. But I didn't really understand it fully until, you know, I went through training with my men in an infantry platoon. Back then, it was just men in the infantry. Shoot, move, communicate together. And then you go to war, and then you fight, bleed, and die together. And then you start learning about them. And then the legacy of the unit that you're in. I mean, man, we really are standing on the shoulders of giants, you know, in this country, of all the American war fighters and warriors who came before us, who sacrificed so much for everything that we have here. So I get the opportunity now in the Pentagon to represent that legacy. But every American war fighter in uniform today, and everybody who would don the uniform in the future, man, now I understand that we're standing on the shoulders of giants going into it, and I get a second opportunity to serve with these men and women. Man, it's crazy. But never been in the Pentagon. So I'll probably get lost. I was a lieutenant. That's probably the first thing that will happen.
No, yeah, I'm glad to hear you talk like that, though, because it is so awesome. I was actually listening to a podcast on the way to the studio today. I wish I could plug them. I can't think of it, but it was World War II in the Pacific history, and it was about some guy, Medal of Honor recipient, David Rule, who spent the night on Iwo Jima, spent one night in a foxhole with a dead Japanese soldier who he had killed with a K-bar getting into the foxhole, and then he jumps on a grenade, saves his buddy's life, gives his life on Iwo Jima, and you just think about that kind of heroism, that kind of people, and now it's your job. I mean, you, Pete, the boys, it's your job to make sure that military legacy is maintained, one that has been attacked a lot over the last 4 years. It's an awesome responsibility. It is.
It is, and it's an honor to do it, especially as a ground pounder, right? I was in the infantry. You were in the infantry. you know, and, you know, I witnessed my soldiers on the battlefield do extraordinary things. I mean, believe me when I tell you, they are on the forefront of my mind as I take this role. But also everybody that's in the uniform now, and you look over the last 4 years of how still the greatest military on the face of the planet, but I think we can all acknowledge that we've gotten way off track with this crazy social experimentation, this insane focus on DEI. You know, and I know, that if you're in an infantry platoon, you only have so much time to train before you go to the battlefield, before you go to combat. If you're even spending one singular second learning about someone's pronouns or some crazy rainbow flag, you are not focused on what you need to do to keep the man to your left and to your right alive. And this is serious, serious stuff. When lives are on the line, you can't afford any distraction. And so, you know, not only is it an honor to represent these American warfighters, but it's also a once in a lifetime opportunity to really get our military back on the right track. And that is a focus on readiness. That is a relentless focus on the mission, evolving the force to where we need to be to combat conventional threats and ultimately lethality. That's what it's all about. We got 4 years to do it. We got to move fast.
Yeah, you do. Sean, what are you, and I understand you're going to be limited in what you're probably allowed to tell me right now, and that's obviously totally fine, but what are you encountering as far as resistance from within the military-industrial complex so far? We see all these stories about, you know, USAID's in the news right now, Treasury Department, DOJ. I did see Linda Fagan with the Coast Guard had to get the heave-ho. Are you getting any resistance from inside?
No, not yet. In fact, I haven't even officially been to the Pentagon yet. So I'm just doing all my onboarding paperwork right now and getting ready to transition down there. But, you know, my approach, Jesse, and it might be, look, the last guy that did this job was John Kirby before the Biden White House pulled him over to the to help the press secretary because she was just terrible over there. But my approach here, Jesse, is one of radical transparency in this job, because, you know, the American people have lost an enormous amount of trust in our institutions across the board, but especially in once honorable institutions like the Department of Defense, the American military. And so I am going to tell the truth to people. When I have information, you know, the American people will hear it, the American media will have opportunities to ask questions about it. Now, you know, can't be divulging troop movements and classified information, but the point is, do you remember in Afghanistan during the surrender when, you know, journalists in the Pentagon reported that, oh, we killed a suicide bomber, going to attack at Abbey Gate. Actually, it was an Afghan family with children. I'm going to make sure that never happens, because the American people have a right to know what's going on in the world. And so I'm just approaching this, you know, with big eyes, big ears, you know, trying to be humble and self-effacing, and just a pledge to be radically transparent and honest with the American people. That's all, you know, that's all I can offer. And that's exactly what I'm going to do.
I have no doubt you'll get it done. All right, Sean, finally, I'm assuming, after you get your nice little cushy office in the Pentagon, I'm assuming you get to fly around to our various military installations around the globe. After all, you're Mr. Big Shot Pentagon guy. And so, look, if there's an extra seat on any of those planes or anything like that, you have my number. I'm just saying, don't lose my number now that you're a big shot. Don't lose my number. I want to come along.
Wait a second. Are you just mad because an Army guy got this spot instead of a Marine like yourself?
Yes.
Is that what this is
yes.
about? Because this feels like that. So I'll tell you what. Here's my pledge to you. If I'm traveling around and you want to come broadcast and you're able to do that, come broadcast your radio show from the Pentagon. The media gets an entire row there. We'll make sure we have our servicemen and women there lined up like it's college football Sunday. Come and do one of your shows from the Pentagon if you get an opportunity. I will make it happen. I promise you, I will make it happen. I'm sure the Marines will love you, right? As they depart from coloring in their coloring books, you know?
I will see you soon, my brother. Congrats. I love seeing your star rise. I'm not surprised that I'll be good, my man. It's actually not a terrible idea. I'm gonna have to talk to producer Matt about that after the show. We could do the show from the Pentagon. Like, I know the Pentagon's probably gonna be disappointing. It's old and stuff like that, but I've never been to the Pentagon. Have you ever been to the Pentagon? I wanna go to the Pentagon. Anyway, we're not done yet. We'll be back. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And so let me start with something that sounds a little bit dark or down, but it's really not. It's really not, because I know we're lightening the mood here. You know we're not going to be in power forever, right? It's the mistake everyone makes whenever they take power. In America, I've watched this for the entirety of my life. When Democrats win an election, Democrat after Democrat will run to the television. They'll talk to each other. We're never going to lose again. Republicans suck. Everyone hates them. We're going to be in power forever. I remember, I think it was when Obama got elected, James Carville stepped in and he said, we're going to have Democrat rule for 40 years. I'm pretty sure I have that one right. Of course, that didn't work out. Barack Obama did his 8 years and boop, Donald Trump came in. And Republicans do the same thing. Whenever we win an election, they're never going to have power again. Democrats are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and now everybody knows it, and they're never coming back again. But that's not true. They will, eventually. They will. It's just how life goes. They will. However, because it's a light in the mood segment, and I wanted to leave you with something happy, I'll leave you with this. I'm not sure the Democrats aren't going to be in the wilderness for quite some time. I'm really not sure. Yeah, well, eventually they'll come back, but something has happened, and I'm not sure if Democrats can change it, you see. Over time, their party changed. It went from being more of kind of a blue-collar party, that at least that's how they always sold it, a blue-collar, working man, poor man's American party, that kind of, that's what it went from. It went from that into being this completely insane cultural Marxist party where it's really just academic elites and complete communists screaming at each other about things. And so before I play you this video, it's amazing, it's from the DNC. I just wanna remind you that yes, Democrats will always hold power in, you know, Oakland. They're gonna have New York, they're gonna have these things. But in order to win the presidency, you have to win Michigan. You have to win Pennsylvania. You have to win Wisconsin. Winning the campus of Berkeley, California does not earn you the presidency. I just don't know if this party is ready to win Pennsylvania.
The rules specify that when we have a gender non-binary candidate or officer, the non-binary individual is counted as neither male nor female, and the remaining six offices must be gender balanced.
In this round, so I'm going to... I have a show of hands. How many of you believe that racism and misogyny played a role in Vice President Harris's defeat? Okay. So that's good. You all pass.
Na kosten wol yehki e ba a che danidzin. Welcome. The Democratic National Committee wishes to acknowledge that we gather together to state our values on lands that have been stewarded through many centuries by the ancestors and the descendants of tribal nations who have been here since time immemorial. We honor the communities native to this continent and recognize that our country was built on indigenous lands and hope.
And we'll begin with the opening statements. Each candidate will have 30 seconds, and we'll start with Dr. Quintessa Hathaway.
Good evening, everyone. It is my desire to be the next DNC chair, and I just want to give you all a little bit of something that's been on my heart here over the last couple of days. You fight on, you fight on. You fight on, you fight on. When your government is doing you wrong, you fight on, oh, you fight on.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hathaway.
I don't know when they're going to come back. I don't know. Maybe it'll be 4 years from now. Crazier things have happened, but it doesn't look like they got things figured out quite yet. I'll see you tomorrow.